Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Visit one of our 44 stores across Ireland for quality curtains and bedding at great prices. Find your perfect style today.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. 51551 is our text number. We will have an update later on from Mimi about the story of her amazing disappearing overcoat. So stay tuned. Hopefully it'll be good news. Alan Marr, Alan, why did you contact us? Good afternoon. 51551 is our text number.
Joe, great to be on here. I am a journalist, so just first, let me get this out of the way. Two vacancies are in our not-for-profit Changing Ireland magazine based in Moyross. In social media and freelance journalism. And really the reason I got onto you was about birds in our community and what a great time people can spend with them. And there's about a week and a half left nationally to go see murmurations of starlings. And I would argue that Fetimore in County Limerick has the best, most reliable murmuration in the country.
Would you explain to listeners what murmurations are on radio?
Yeah, and apologies for the throwing in the ad at the start, but no, you had me on before when times were a bit tougher in Moyross, and it's just nice to have some good news.
Okay.
A murmuration is 20,000 to 25,000 birds.
Wow.
Circling, doing all sorts of shapes. A photographer called James Crombie, I believe he had him on before, and he was here only 2 nights ago, took a fantastic photo up in Loch Ennell, further up the country, of 20,000 birds making the shape of a bird reflected in the lake. And I think that really got people's interest up. I and a friend of mine here locally, Tony Graham, we had been watching our murmuration on our own for some time. But now if I go down this evening, I expect 20, 25 people there blocking up the laneway, parking all over the place, standing in a muddy field.
And why do you say there's only a week and a half to see these murmurations?
It's like kids breaking up for school. They have to break for the spring, go build their nests, lay eggs, rear offspring, and then they'll come back in November. Yeah.
And have we any idea why and how they do this incredible symmetrical, geometrical synchronicity in the sky? We've all seen small murmurations, I suspect. Nothing like the many over in Loch Ennell, 25,000.
Well, I'm in Fetimore. I've not been up to Loch Ennell, but I hear it's fabulous.
No, but the photograph is the one that people might know from Loch Ennell with the shape. Birds murmurating, if that's the proper word, in the shape of a bird. How many starlings would be in that?
Yeah, congratulations even for being able to say murmurating. It took me a couple of years to be able to say murmuration. Why do they make the shapes? I think it's to scare off predators. That's the human guess as to why they do it. Others surmise that they're doing it for our entertainment, but I don't think that's the case.
But how do we know how they do it without colliding?
It's incredible. Scientists have looked at it. It is. When I've stood underneath them, which is something you can do here, and look up, and you can see layers of them going over each other. Going in different directions. You'd have maybe 5,000 going one direction and 5,000 or 6,000 overhead going the other direction. So from a far distance, it looks, how does this work? But up close, you can also pick one bird and just follow it. And they're going 80 kilometres an hour. I mean, it's absolutely, it never gets boring. I don't know what people are doing in pubs when they could be doing down in Fetimore in the fields or in Loch Ennell.
Is there particular places in the country where you have a better chance of witnessing a murmuration, especially we've about 8 days, 9 days to go?
It might go a little longer, you know, up to the birds, but this is why I phoned up in the first place to say Fetimore is the most reliable guaranteed spot until they break to head off and make nests.
Okay, so is there any particular time in Fetimore that people should go down?
It's about 25 minutes before sunset. You'd want to be off your bicycle or into your wellies. You don't need wellies, by the way. You can watch them from the side of the road.
Of course, yeah.
Not a main road now, it's safe. And Loch Ennell has a hotel. You know, there were 200 people up in Loch Ennell a week ago. But they were at the wrong end of the lake, Joe. They all had to hop in their cars quickly and try to get to the other side of the lake, by which time the birds were gone to bed.
Okay.
Fedimore guaranteed. That's the... We're trying to put Fedimore on the map, Joe.
Okay. And where is Fedimore? I know it's in Limerick, obviously. You've just told me. But whereabouts...
Well, as I mentioned, the work in my...
Where's your nearest Aldi or Lidl to Fedimore? That's how people know where everything is. Where's your nearest Aldi or Lidl to Fedimore?
Roxburgh.
In Limerick.
Limerick.
So James,
15 minutes.
Okay, James Crombie. James, good afternoon. 51551 joe@rt.ie. You are this famous photographer. Well, you are now. How did you capture... I'm conscious of radio. Would you describe this incredible image you captured? How you captured it, when you captured it, how many days you slept out in the open... living wild before you got the photograph. James Crombie.
Nice, thanks very much. I suppose I spent about 50 nights here in a row at the start of COVID, and one night they just performed in a way that I've never seen before. It's driven by a bird of prey, generally.
Okay.
We've peregrine falcons and sparrowhawks knocking around, and they're what actually scare the birds into shaping, I suppose, and forming shapes. And luckily enough, one night, 100,000 of them turned into a bird.
Okay. And how many of them do you reckon was in that? I'm sure we're tweeting that iconic photograph. How many of them were in that iconic photograph? Do you reckon?
It's impossible to say.
Of course.
It's so dense. I'd imagine they estimate the numbers here, 100,000, 200,000 is on lockdown.
Wow.
And when they come together, and you're asking how they don't knock off each other. Supposedly, the scientists believe that... So you only look after the eight birds around you.
Okay.
So everyone moves in significantly. That's what the scientists say. But it's just an amazing spectacle.
So they're in octets, like there's eight of them in a.
Yeah.
And the murmurations.
Well, it goes out in mass. So the eight just look after eight around them. And the whole. I think that's what they believe they're doing. Because, like, they never crash into each other. They're. You never see a bird falling out of formation either. They move in a very synthetic way. So it's amazing.
And do we know why they don't collide?
Well, I suppose they just make sure they don't hit the birds, the eight birds around them, and then they're fairly safe. It's hard to know, really, but they're amazing. Their agility, the way they fly when it's windy compared to when it's the way they use the wind to float, and it's crazy.
And is it half an hour before sunset generally?
Yeah, down here in Loch Ennell, generally about a half an hour before sunset's a good time to get there. It generally happens around sunset, so that's when you'll see the main activity. But they'll start to gather in smaller and smaller groups, and just all of a sudden then the sky is full of them.
Wow. And do you, Alan seems to be, wants to start a debate about where's the best place in the country to... See it. Where do you reckon it is, James?
Loch Ennell by far, don't worry. I actually visited Fedimore last night. I was down in Limerick doing... I'm a sports photographer, so I was actually doing a rugby game in Limerick yesterday. So I went down and visited the guys down there. But no, there's some nights they're better here, some nights they're better at other places. They're also in Ferns and Wexford, they're in Kilkenny, they're in Loch Len in Westmeath, they're in Loch Ree. So they are all over the place. You can just...
Is there anywhere they don't murmurate?
I suppose they're less active in certain places. There's less birds of prey. From what in Loch Ennell, if the bird of prey doesn't show up, if he's being lazy that day, you get a nice show, and we call it like shoaling. It's like a shoal of fish.
Okay.
But when he shows up, then you'll start to see the mad shapes and the. They'll go off in balls and they'll separate, and that's really the bird of prey. I suppose he's out for his dinner, and that's what really hits it off.
Okay, Mick Clark is in Meath. Mick, good afternoon.
How are you, Joe?
Are you now claiming Meath as the murmuration capital of Ireland?
No, not for a while. A couple of years ago, I suppose during lockdown, the village of Knobbridge is on the north side of Meath. They appeared kind of from nowhere and would draw a large crowd, say, around okay. 4 or 5 o'clock in the evening. Fascinating to look at, fascinating to see, but on a main road, you were getting people gathering just to watch them, you know?
And when is it, have they disappeared from Meath? Is that what you're saying?
I haven't. Do you feel left out? No, we don't feel left out.
You feel abandoned?
Meath is the home of football. We've enough there to keep us going.
You feel abandoned?
No. It's fascinating to see Fettimore.
They never abandon us in Fettimore now. Every night, guaranteed.
Yeah.
I would say there is massive numbers of people coming to Lochennel, and just people be respectful of car parking and stuff.
Of course,
make sure
yeah.
you're not... And safety.
We don't want thousands arriving in Fettimore and...
No, jeez, maybe it's actually Fettimore is the worst. They hardly ever. Sometimes it's only a few of them.
Okay.
Yeah. We like it to ourselves.
Oh, you're talking it down now.
Joe, we
James,
started off with this, James, and it was just two of us. I'm just saying it's really grown, and it's a really healthy thing to do. And yeah, as James is saying, don't be respectful if there's big crowds of people. Sorry for interrupting you on talking.
No, I just want to ask James your photograph, that iconic photograph. I presume that went round the world. I hope it did.
That has ended up everywhere. It was on CNN last week, like 3.5 years later. But I was being interviewed on the Middle East TV and American TV and Australia. It's been everywhere. Like it's amazing that happens in Ireland. You know, we don't have to travel to Sahara to get an amazing picture. There is some amazing wildlife here in Ireland, and we're all respectful of it. Long continue, hopefully.
And
I think it started in Meath, Joe. I think the first ones were in Meath and Nobber.
Okay, well, of course, everything starts in Nobber, or the home of Irish comedy. James, you filmed it as well, didn't you? That's the other joy.
I've done a little bit of video, but a friend of mine, Colin Hogg, and there's two friends, Enda and Colin, that I go with most nights, and they do a bit more filming than I do. I'm more of a hardcore photographer, so...
Now,
in film.
Given that your photograph of this murmuration in the shape of a board, you say there could be the shape of there could be between 100,000 and 200,000 starlings in it over Lochennel, that incredible photograph. When it's reproduced, you get paid.
I don't give the birds a royalty, but I get a few quid when it gets used. Yeah,
great.
Not too bad. And I would say there's they travel from four different sites. They travel in a kind of a radius of 40 kilometres.
Wow.
So kind of 80 kilometres either way. So that's generally where they're coming from. That's why the numbers get so big. So I live about 25 kilometres away. I see the guys arriving in the morning and even in the evening heading for the lake. And that's why the numbers get so big. And they're going to eventually, as the lads were saying, it's going to finish up in about Paddy's Day, they reckon, around here generally.
Well, that's not too far
and
away.
They'll start heading back to... some of them will stay here locally in Ireland, and the rest will head back to Scandinavia or up to the colder climates where it was in the winter.
Now, has Ireland... Have we a unique place in the world of murmurations?
No, definitely not. Rome is amazing for them.
Wow.
If you can, but there's so many buildings there, you have to really be on the roofs. But Scandinavia, this guy, a photographer from Denmark, came over here to look at the Irish murmurations compared to the Danish ones. So, look, they're all over Europe. Some people think the starlings can be a bit of a pest as well, because if they poo on your roof and they get into your sheds and stuff, you know.
Westport had a big problem with that years ago.
And if there was, James, if there was, I'll come back to you in a second, Adam, but James, if there was an Olympics in murmurations, which country would win it?
Which country?
Yeah.
I would say Ireland, you know, but I'm always going to back Ireland.
But you've just told me Rome was incredible for her.
No, Rome is, but not like what we have here in Ireland. I know Rome has got beautiful sunsets and stuff. They actually try to move them out of Rome. They shine lights to the trees when they roost the trees there because they're pooing all the cars and they're pooing all the buildings.
We
don't do that down here, luckily. We don't try and move them on.
Well, the people have a problem with... I know no one likes being pooed on by a seagull or whatever, but the people generally, they try and keep birds away from their town because of the excrement.
Well, what starlings will do is they'll roost in your chimneys and in your gutters and in your roof.
Okay.
They can be, you know, they'll get in. There's actually a good story about a little murmuration up in Belfast. It was under the, I think it's George's Bridge, that they put lights on it and the murmuration left. So they have to actually remove the lights and the murmuration's come back. So it's a big spectacle up there now. It's not as big a numbers as you have here. And the UK is great for murmuration as well. Brighton Pier, every night in the winter, is amazing. And it's a very visual place, you know, the pier there. So,
and it's a great sight to witness if you're lucky enough to witness it. Does it happen in Dublin at all? Given it's the biggest part of our population.
It probably does in somewhere. Like, if it was 5 kilometres into a field in land without roads and stuff, you mightn't see it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, like, that's 5 kilometres
away. So if they found a nice place up in the Dublin Mountains, I'm sure they do. I haven't had any report and I haven't seen any pictures or anything from Dublin, but I imagine there is somewhere in Dublin.
Okay, so Alan, an invitation to people, if you want to see a murmuration before, and St. Patrick's Day seems to be the cut-off. I remember it's the 1st of March now, this coming Saturday. Where should people go? Not just Fenimore now.
I'd have to say that there's a guy called Philip O'Byrne set up a Starlings Murmuration Ireland page on Facebook, and that's a great place to point people to for, you know, choices, because depending on where you live, you might live near Ferns or Kilkenny or up north, up by Belfast. If you do go to Loch Ennell, you've got, you know, a lovely hotel, you've got the lake. Come to Fenimore, you've got a nice hill in the background. And like you said, Westport used to have murmuration. I used to live there years ago, and it was a bit of a problem for tourists getting out of their cars. But Westport also has, I just checked it there, they still have a murmuration going on. But that's Starlings Murmuration Ireland page.
Well, get in ASAP. A half an hour before sunset, you have until St. Patrick's Day. James, you've written a book on murmurations. What's it called?
It's called Murmurations.
Funnily enough,
Lilliput Press printed it really good. I just want to mention, actually, for the Facebook group is amazing. And anyone coming to Loch Ennell in the next few weeks, is a lady called Philomena Brady, who's been amazing. She's there every night, come hail, rain and snow. She'll then be with anyone there to tell them where the best spot that might be.
Okay, well done. Well done. Alan Marr, James Crombie, Mick Clark. Go to meet them all. Good. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at rt.ie, the COVID inquiry in the UK has been going on now for at least 9 months, and it's very much a part of the national discourse. We were promised a COVID inquiry here. It hasn't arrived as of yet. But people, 5 years after the first cases, early March 2020, people do want to talk about it for difficult and traumatic and poignant reasons. Liz Whelan. Liz, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Tell us about your husband, Sean, Liz.
Sean was hospitalised with COVID in 2020.
Mm-hmm.
He was taken away by ambulance on the Saturday, maybe in or around the 9th, 10th of March.
Okay.
And the doctor from Waterford Regional Hospital phoned me the following day to say that it was critical for the next 48 hours.
Okay.
He had sepsis, he had pneumonia, they couldn't keep the temperature down, and he was in intensive care. Now, Joe, he was very lucky he came through it all.
Great.
But he spent 21 days in Waterford Regional.
Wow. And what was that 3 weeks like?
Desperate, to say the least. Because, Joe, I'm from a small town in Greignamana, County Kilkenny, and I wasn't allowed to leave the house because it was all new to everybody,
course,
to all the professional, you know, doctors and nurses and what have you. So therefore, I had to stay in the house for a fortnight. Oh, I had an uncle that lived with me. He was a bachelor. He was 93. He died during the COVID 2 months later in April. Sorry, 1 month later. Oh, and he didn't understand what was going on. Mm-hmm. And I had a daughter here with me as well. And we all tested. We hadn't COVID when we were tested, which is unbelievable.
And you remember the dreaded test, Liz?
Oh, I do indeed, Joe. Yes, yeah. I do.
And just give. Were you confined to the house? Could you go and see your husband?
I was. Yeah. Absolutely. No, not at all. I wasn't allowed to the hospital.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I wasn't allowed to leave the house, only for my sister, my brothers. And my cousin, she was a very good girl. That her name is Kay Healy. Mm. And friends of mine, like Edward Hayden. You know Edward, Joe, I'm sure?
Of course, yeah. Then,
yeah. Very good friend of mine also. He brought up lovely treatables now and again. And I had a very good girl that's nursing in Waterford Regional. She's from the town here. Margaret MacDonald is her name. And she brought up and down stuff to my husband.
Incredible. And could you have any contact with your people? Were using Zoom or
no, because you see it was all new to them as in Waterford Regional, you know. After the 3 days, he told me they were like astronauts, the doctors and nurses, and he was confined to a little room. And even the kitchen staff, he said, all you'd see is their eyes through the slot of the door to know what he would like for his breakfast or lunch or dinner, you know.
Oh, my God.
And the weather was amazing in the month of March.
People reminded me that yesterday. The weather was amazing during the first lockdown, which was
fabulous.
Yeah. But Liz, afterwards, how did Sean reflect on his experience?
But like, yeah, I suppose, Joe, he was so sick, he didn't really know what was going on.
Okay.
You know, but like, since he's over the COVID now, he has COPD, plus he has no taste anymore, Joe. And he's a big man, you know.
Which disappeared for a lot of people. Now, a lot of people got him. Did the taste come back?
No, Joe. No. And he gets very tired from time to time. And he won't be 60 until July coming, you know. And plus, sorry, Joe, I might have to cut in on you.
No, go ahead, please, Liz.
His sister, that was 51, she died with it in St. Luke's Hospital.
Oh, my God, in Kilkenny. Oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah. It was a very, very dark times, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a very strong way and a correct way of putting it there, but they were very dark times.
Very. It was fear of the unknown, more or less, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah. And you capture that in what you were saying, that when nobody knew how... One, we didn't know how awful how dangerous the symptoms could be. 10,000 people died in Ireland from COVID.
That's right.
10,000. And it was a worldwide pandemic.
Yes, and he was the first in Greignamana. You know, it's not even a village. I suppose it's the town, you could call it, more or less, in County Kilkenny. And it went around like wildfire. You can understand, Joe.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, it's just, it's and you mentioned that your relative had died in Kilkenny. Were the funeral restrictions in then?
Oh, God, yes.
Yeah.
She died in St. Luke's. She was 50.
Such a young age.
In the hospital herself. And she had, she could have no funeral. Just, you know, the family going behind their rest. And my uncle was the same here that died in the house with me. He was 93 years old and he couldn't even go to the church, and he was a great liver, Joe, all of his life.
Yeah. Stay with us, Liz. Your line is not great. Yeah. Michael Stafford. Michael, good afternoon. It was September 2020, 5 years ago. You lost your sense of taste and smell. Was it from COVID?
Yes, so it was. Good afternoon.
And tell us your memory of that awful time.
I mean, it's still ongoing. It's interesting that we talk about long COVID and going back to it, the COVID times. I think a lot of us have forgotten it's still prevalent for so many of us. Mm-hmm. And taste and smell is so memories with people and so
okay,
on.
Okay, Michael, I'm going to have to take a break and see can we improve those lines. Joe at RT.ie, stay with us. 51551 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
By the way, just to give an overview there, the latest statistics as of April 2024 is that 7,100,681 people have died from COVID. There were 705 million confirmed cases of COVID in 229 countries. It's still very hard to assess the fatality rate because in some countries, like here, I presume, there's 96-98% accuracy in terms of recording. But in some other countries, it obviously wouldn't be as developed. There could be an accuracy rate of less than 10%. But anyway, over 7 million people died of COVID. Is Liz, are you back there, Liz?
I am indeed, okay. Certainly, John.
Okay, you're on. Tell us about, did you have to gown up? Did you have to get the PPE gear?
No, because I didn't leave the house, you see, Joe.
Oh, you never, okay.
No, but the medics that came into my husband, they were gowned up completely.
Okay, and then to get an update on your husband?
No, I had to wait. I did ring the hospital, but they had no update for me because he was in intensive care. Yeah. With the result then that the doctor phoned me the following day and told me that the next 48 hours were critical.
But would you, I know that this is the other problem, that the hospitals were inundated, but were you able to talk to someone in the hospital every day, for example, if your husband was in such...
Yes, I had two very good nurses.
Okay.
They kept me just kind
brilliant.
Of updated.
Brilliant.
The staff were 100%, Joe. They were absolutely excellent, you know.
It's just the whole image that you create there is just...
Oh, it was
so
desperate.
So awful.
Strange times, you know.
Strange times is dark times, I think is the phrase you use.
Dark times.
Michael Stafford, stay there, Liz. Michael Stafford, good afternoon.
Hiya, Joe. How are you?
As you say, you first got COVID in 2020.
Correct, Joe, yes.
And you lost your sense of smell and taste.
I have, and it still eludes me.
Oh, wow.
It's really interesting listening to the listeners talk about this subject for the last couple of days because I think some people don't realise the impact that losing taste and smell has on your overall well-being and trying to stay well.
And then, Michael, you got COVID 5 times. I've never heard of anyone getting it that.
Yeah, and my husband has had it 6 times. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. The last time was last. The last time I had it was last October when I went to Spain.
To go back to Liz for a sec, Liz, when your husband was finally moved from ICU and you could go and see him, or could you go and see him? What was that like?
No, he didn't even come out onto a ward, Joe. He was kept isolated all the time. Until the day he came home.
How long was he away from you in between hospital and...
21 days.
Yeah. Okay. And when did you speak to him again? After how long was the duration?
Oh, it was a good 5 days. And Joe, I can tell you here and now, when his mobile rang onto my mobile... It was amazing, being quite honest.
And when you saw his name coming up?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Fantastic.
Very emotional. It was very emotional.
Winning the lotto, as you said. Like winning the lotto, absolutely.
Yeah.
Michael was telling me there his husband got COVID six times, Liz.
Yeah, actually, I did.
Have you ever heard of somebody getting it more than six times?
No, Sean only got it the once. And let me tell you, Joe, that was enough in the nation.
Of course it was.
You know.
And did you ever get it, Liz?
No. Sorry, Joe, I did actually, but maybe 2 years later.
Okay,
but I got a mild version of it, you know.
Not with that severity.
Oh,
totally
nothing like that.
Yeah.
Not at all. No.
Okay.
No.
Okay, well, Liz, thanks indeed for that. And Michael as well, six. And by the way, Michael, you got it five times. Did the severity change or improve, or lessen or dilute over time?
Each episode is very different, Joe. It can be that it debilitates you for a week, or it can be that it just feels like a mild flu.
Yeah. Anyway, as I say, when you read out those stats, 7 million dead from COVID, 229 countries, 700 million cases, confirmed cases of COVID. It's shocking. What about Michael? You say your sense of smell is gone. I've asked this before. Is there a particular smell that you miss most?
Well, I'll tell you two examples. We got a dog during COVID. Fergus is his name. I've never smelled the dog. So I feel like there's a little bit of a connection that's not able to be established because of that. But also, like, just the smells of candles and food and all of those beautiful things that many people take for granted. It's a world that I often describe as, if you remember The Wizard of Oz, the scene where it went from black and white in Kansas to the Technicolor of Oz. It's like the reverse of that, Joe.
Mm. And what about food, Michael? Your appreciation of food?
I eat for the sake of eating now, or else sometimes I don't eat at all. I have to remind myself to eat. There's no enjoyment in food whatsoever anymore.
And did you, were you a foodie?
Yes, I would have been a foodie. I would have loved to go out socialising and going to different restaurants. So now I avoid that, or else my friends who have been very supportive will do other activities that don't involve eating.
Okay. Well, that's a big wrench, isn't it?
Yeah.
In your life.
We socialise by eating and getting together and telling stories. And
cooking and everything that's involved. Yeah, shopping, cooking and preparing and
all of
experimenting
that.
And then...
Yeah. And Joe, just to even say as well, I almost became obsessive with food that was out of, you know, coming up to out of date. So even if the milk says it's 3 days in date, because I can't smell it, I won't take the risk. So I'll pass it to someone else and say, can you smell this for me? And they say, yeah, it's fine. But I liken it to the fact I could probably drink a bottle of bleach and wouldn't even know I was drinking it.
And if you, given that your sense of smell is still gone, have you been diagnosed with long COVID?
Yeah, so I was on a trial in the Mater Hospital under Dr. Jack Lambert part of long COVID. But that trial ended, and you know, it's 5 years now in September, and I'm exploring alternatives to see. Like, I've tried acupuncture, homeopathic remedies, anything to try to reset the taste and smell. But I would add, over the last 5 years, you could be walking down the road and you might get a whiff of, say, garlic, and you go, oh my God, I can smell garlic. And then you try to find the source of that smell and it would be gone. So it's like you're being teased.
Yeah, false alarm.
False alarm, yeah. Because you think it's coming back.
I know. Insofar as you've tried to count, how many times a day do we think about taste and smell?
Well, on a night, an evening out with friends one day, I counted 43 times the amount of times either taste or smell was mentioned. Because if you're eating a food with somebody, they'll say, isn't this lovely? Oh, would you taste that? And they forget. You don't want to keep reminding your friends or your family that you can't taste or smell. But
you know, if you walk into a restaurant, you don't know the smells that are around you, good, bad, or indifferent. Mm. You know, you don't know how many times we actually talk about food as a nation. It's something that brings us all together. But when you don't have taste or smell, you feel disconnected to it.
And you liken it, as you say, to what the Wizard of Oz in reverse.
Yeah. It's like the world was all colourful and then it went black and white.
Yeah. Now, we have a number of callers. One, a number of callers to talk about taste and smell and it going, disappearing, have got it back. And it came back as suddenly as it disappeared. Mm-hmm. Others have said, I've kind of got used to it. It's not a big issue for me now.
Yeah.
But that's not the case for you, is it, Michael?
Well, I find that every day is a day that you have to try to be hopeful. But at the same time, the reality is it hasn't returned. And it has taken a lot of joy from my life. And the impact that it has on my everyday is substantial. But I try to be as positive as I can, Joe. Yeah, I really want to come across to everybody that you have to be hopeful, because you do hear success stories that people have, that it has returned. Yeah. And I hope that one day that happens.
And you say that this phenomenon now in restaurants where you can watch the chef's table, isn't that what they call it?
That's right, the teppanyaki. Yes. Yeah, we went to a lovely restaurant 2 weeks ago for a friend's, my husband's birthday. I shouldn't say a friend's birthday, but my husband's birthday. Yeah. And we actually explored options of how we could bring enjoyment back into the experience of food. So really enjoyable to see the chef, you know, cooking the food in front of you. And I had a really good time. But at the same time, as soon as the food is presented to you, you are reminded, I can't taste this.
Now, does that mean, if you can't taste it, is there a danger you'd eat stuff that might aggravate your tummy?
Absolutely.
Oh, exactly.
And because I got COVID and it's affected my gut in such a bad way, I have to be very mindful that I can't put anything too hot in or anything that is chilly or spicy, because it will have other impacts on the body.
Are you eating less?
Yeah, so sometimes I'd eat less. I could be 1 or 2 days before I'd actually eat anything. And then there's days where I overeat and I explain it to probably eating my emotions, how I'm feeling about it. So each day is different, Joe.
Oh, I see that. That's really challenging now. It really is. Let's see, can we hear from more people if they did get the get their sense of smell back. Michael, Gurumina Mahagat Vahil, and onwards. And I know you're trying everything, aren't you? You're trying homeopathy. Hopefully.
Live in hope, though.
Yeah, you're very good. You're very good. And I think you've explained the challenge of it, the loss of taste and smell very powerfully. Very powerfully.
Thank you.
That's Michael Stafford. Thank you, Michael. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 text.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Stella Ring is in Port Leash. Stella, you want to remember your Aunt Chrissy, who died early in the pandemic.
Yes, my aunt, she was 93.
Yeah.
And when she passed away, she actually passed away in the district hospital in Abelix after having a stroke in 2009. Yeah. Now, Chrissy was a great character and would have been known all around Ballinakil and Abelix. Mm. She spent a lot of time at home living with us, you know, coming to our house to help my mother rear 5 of us, you know. So she was 6 of us, sorry. So she would have been well known in the area. But Chrissy got a stroke in 2009 and ended up in Aberdeen Hospital. And I just want to say thanks to the staff there. They were excellent. Okay. And my brother, Jim Ring, and his wife, Claire Ring, who looked after Chrissy for many years, you know, as she aged. But Chrissy passed away in 2020 on the 5th of April. And she was brought to the little church in Abeleeks beside the main church. Mm-hmm. It was known as the Nun's Chapel.
But before, before Chrissy passed away, I know she didn't have COVID, but you could, I presume you couldn't visit her, could you, unless you stood outside?
My brother did all the, my brother went all the time, Jim, okay, and his wife Claire. They were allowed to visit.
Okay.
And they took care of her needs. And Jim and his son James are in a band, Abbey Folk, and they used to go in every now and again before COVID, and they'd play music there in the hospital. So I'd like just to say thanks to Jim and Claire for all of what they did for our aunt when we couldn't do it. But when Chrissy passed away, her coffin was brought to this little church, and there was five of us at the funeral.
And a closed coffin as well, isn't it?
A closed coffin.
Yeah.
And the undertaker, he was the person that said a decade of the rosary.
Yeah.
And that was it. And from then, we just followed the coffin out to the cemetery in Bandykill, where Chrissy was laid to rest with the five of us. And the priest was there at a distance and said a decade of the rosary. Now, Chrissy would have went to every funeral. She was a great lady for a funeral. She was a great lady for a mass every Sunday. And it's so sad to think that, you know, she didn't get a proper funeral.
And
not
you were
even
saying
that.
she was a great walker. Lots of people knew
her.
Very popular.
Very popular. And when she got her pension on a Friday, she'd go up to the post office and go across to the local pub and have her little whiskey.
Good woman. Good
and
woman.
Chat away to the, you know, the neighbours. So she was well known.
And then to think of her funeral against that backdrop of someone
time.
Someone so popular, and people would have wanted to pay their respects to her.
Yeah, and she deserved better. And, you know, Joe, the sad thing about it is because on the obituary, it actually didn't mention the time or anything of a funeral. So when we left that little church and went to Bandykill, left through Aberdeeks to Bandykill, there was nobody out on the streets because nobody had known she had died because she died in the nursing home. And it was such it was a nice day, but very bleak. And very sad to think after all her life of 93 years and after doing all the work that she did for people and helped, especially our family and my mother, that's all that she got. And she deserved more than that.
And Stella,
she deserved a lot more than that.
Remember, shortly after the pandemic finished in the beginning of 2022, there was a memorial, I think it was in the Garden of Remembrance. There was a National Day of Commemoration.
That's right, I remember
that. Did that have any significance for people?
I'm sure it did, but it would never take away from a funeral. Because a funeral is a place where people come together to sympathise with family. And I always think the eulogy is a very important part of a funeral because people hear stories that they've never heard about that person who was passed.
It's
great for a family to thank all those who looked after the people and all the families that looked after those who passed away, especially around COVID time. And that's why I'd like to say thanks to all the staff in the district hospital. They were excellent. Now, she loved it there in the 11 years she spent there before she passed. But she didn't get COVID, believe it or not.
Yeah, I know.
And there was no COVID in that hospital.
Yeah.
That would tell you the how well that was, how the patients were looked after in Aberdeen's hospital.
So did Chrissy you know, get a mass?
No mass.
No mass.
She got a decade of the rosary, and that was said by the undertaker, Eamon Kelly. Kelly's undertakers in Aberdeen. I have to mention them. They were excellent.
Okay.
You know, it was such a sad end to a long life of somebody who made an impact on the people that she met. And she was funny, and she was one of those characters that every town has and every little village has that you'll always remember.
Yeah.
You know, sad. I just think it's very sad for all those people that died during COVID.
And how are you doing? How are you processing all of this?
Well, when I was listening to this yesterday, this came to my head. But my brother Jim now, who, as I said, and his wife Claire were just so good, they found it very difficult because he spent a lot of time with Chrissy when we weren't there because I was looking after my dad at the time. And like he took it very hard. And then my brother couldn't come from Mayo, and a lot of the family couldn't come, to the funeral. And we couldn't say our goodbyes, and we couldn't see her. And it's a difficult time for people, and it's something you'll never forget.
Yeah.
So I would just love to think that these people, maybe some stories could be compiled and recorded for the National Archives. So in time, people will know what happened.
Well, I know at one stage, the National Folklore Museum in Mayo, they are compiling. I don't know if the extent of it, but I know because I used to use that phrase, wash our hands, and we used to send out cards to people with that phrase on it. They looked for cards with, they looked for any sort of memorabilia. And remember all the posters, all the yellow stickers, all the Perspex glass. It was just the effect on our lives, Stella.
Oh, yeah, and the fear.
Yeah.
There was such, people were just so afraid.
Yeah.
You know, it was an awful time, but I suppose we had no choice because we didn't know what we were dealing with, you know.
Okay, well, God rest Chrissy. God rest her.
God rest Chrissy. I don't want anyone to forget her.
That's what I was going to say. Well remembered, thank you. Not that she'll ever, she's more than a few minutes away from your toss, but well remembered, Chrissy. Thanks indeed. That's Stella Ring in Portlaoise. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
During the break there, Mimi, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe, good afternoon.
During the break there, I just tweeted a photograph of the amazing Technicolor coat that went missing. It's the first time I've seen it. It is an amazing coat. Would you remind people what happened? Just we weren't listening yesterday.
Oh, Joe, you know what? When we think about it now, it's a funny story. But isn't it just the most natural, unintentional thing to happen to anyone? So to make a long story short, my sister and my mother, they were in Dooley's Hotel last Tuesday between 2 and 3. And when they were leaving, my sister walked ahead of her and my mother hopped into this car and the door was open and she just sat in, placed the coat in the back of the car and proceeded to make her phone call home to my dad just to see was everything okay. And the call ended and next thing my sister rang her and she said, "Where are you?" And she said, "I'm sitting in the car waiting for you. Where have you got to?" And she said, "Oh my God, you're in the wrong car. Get out quick." So
and that's where the coat disappeared. That's when the coat disappeared.
Because
Mary the mother, had thrown this beautiful, amazing Technicolor coat in the back of the car, and the car obviously they didn't. Well, maybe they didn't know. We'd find out in a sec. Carl Crimmins, Carl.
Oh hello. Dear.
How are you? Carl, where is the coat now, Carl?
It's in my house.
It's in your house, okay.
I'm not wearing it.
And Carl, where is your house? Is it near Bore in County Offaly or near Limerick?
No, it's in Blackrock.
In Dublin?
They were correct about the registration, but wrong about the description of the car.
Ah.
It's
an old silver Mercedes.
An old silver. Okay. Carl, we know how the... First of all, what were you doing in Burr? Beautiful Burr.
I was with my son and an architectural student, Anna. And we were down in Burr looking at some architectural buildings down there, some Georgian buildings.
Because Bor is a wonderful example, is it, of a town?
It's a wonderful place, yes, it is. So we had looked at one and done some recording. And then we went to Church of Ireland Church.
Okay.
Had a look at that and met the vicar who showed us around.
Right.
It was very interesting. And then we retired to the pub for the hotel for a coffee and sandwich.
Okay.
And I didn't lock my car, but I came into the hotel and I went back out to get my glasses.
Right.
But I mustn't have locked it at that stage.
Okay. And when did you discover the amazing Technicolor overcoat in the back seat?
Well, it was there beside Anna, who is the architectural student.
Yes.
But if he didn't notice, and I didn't notice, I think, until next morning.
Okay. And in the meantime, the coat had travelled back to Dublin in your car.
Yeah, yeah.
And Mimi and her mother had travelled back to Limerick.
Indeed.
So they were separate, further and further apart.
I tried to contact the hotel, but it's, with these websites now, it's almost impossible to get the telephone number.
I know that, I know that. So when did you, when you first spotted the coat, who did you think it belonged to, Cathal?
I thought it would belong to a friend of the family's or a friend of one of my children or grandchildren or somebody. Yeah. There's five people drive my car at different stages. So it could be friends of any of them. I didn't know. And I had no idea.
And you asked around.
I sent the picture of it, one you got.
Yes, great photograph.
Anna.
Yes.
And she came back and said, "Good God, no."
That is
she would be very fashionable.
Okay, and so was Mary, but it's a different age group, obviously. And so you sent the photograph of the coat that's in the back of your car to various people who have used the car.
Lots of people, yeah.
And they all said no.
They didn't come back to us. They didn't come back. But I really assumed that it was somebody in the family.
Okay. When did you realise, Cathal, that the plot thickened and the coat had been inadvertently deposited in your car?
Yesterday my wife heard she was listening to the news and heard the programme.
Yeah.
And she told me.
Okay. And she immediately recognised it was the coat?
Well, it had to be.
Yes.
You know, she knew I was in Burr.
Yes.
I mean, just as well. It could have been very embarrassing for me. Finding a woman's coat full of perfume.
Yeah, we're told.
But as I'm 81, it's highly unlikely.
And Cathal, is that your profession, conservation architect?
Yeah, I'm an architect, but I do a lot of conservation work.
Wow.
And my son is with me from the practice.
Great.
That's it.
It's
lovely, and the hotel was good for lunch.
Yeah. It's a lovely town. Okay. Now, we'll organise to get, with your permission, we'll organise to get the coat taken from your premises under armed guard and delivered back to Limerick safely.
Very good.
Safely, we hope. And it will be, I presume, Mimi, the coat will be conserved properly in Limerick.
Oh, do you know what, Joe? It's going to be framed at this stage, put in a national gallery. But isn't that just wonderful news? Absolutely wonderful. She'd be delighted. Okay.
And Cathal, we were told yesterday that Mary, who's Mimi's mother, that she had a particular fragrance that she had.
Yeah, I'm afraid I didn't get it.
No, didn't get
nothing to do with COVID. I just didn't get it.
Didn't get it. Okay. Well, Cathal, thank you so much, and for your alacrity and alertness of your wife in spotting. Well, as you say, there were so many clues in terms of Boer and Cairns. And by the way, Cathal, would you go to Boer often?
No, but one should. It's very good.
Yes, that's beautiful.
It's a beautiful town, and it's all very pleasant there. You know, like a lot of Irish towns, so. It's slightly sad that the upper floors are not used in the buildings. And there's a big housing problem, as you know.
Yeah,
and a lot of people traditionally lived upstairs over the shop. And it's one of these things that a lot of towns are suffering from. And Dublin, even O'Connell Street, there are buildings on O'Connell Street that I've involved with, where the ground floor is the only usable floor.
Yeah.
Because of fire, disabled access, conservation and other things. It's just impossible. So you've got all this space not used.
And are those challenges of using I saw David McRedman. Do you know David McRedman, Cathal of On Post? And he was involved in this Dublin Rejuvenation committee, and he was lamenting this phenomenon that upstairs is not being used in our city centres, and it would bring life back, and life means...
And the town centres, and the towns.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, there was the tradition of two doors, one into the shop and one
another door
leading to upstairs, but a lot of them don't have that. It's just the shop, and then the staircase somewhere at the back, very often not suitable. So, but, you know, I put it out there that there's a lot of space there for housing.
Yeah.
That's not used.
Yeah, well said, well said. And of course, Cathal, as you know, Bore has another connection with the car, and that is that the first road fatality ever recorded was recorded in Bore in 1869.
Good night, yeah.
Yeah, when the Parsons family, who were, as you know, a very inventive family, and are still relatives and descendants still living there in Bore Castle, one of their number invented a car, motor vehicle, so to speak. And
the address, of course, is Parsonstown, Kings County.
Ah, yes, back in the day.
It was.
And we had Queens County as well, didn't we? So that was 1869, and her name was Mrs. Ward, and she was 42 years of age, and that was the first recorded road fatality in the world. Believe it or not. And anyway, Cathal, thank you so much, not just for contacting us, but for also talking about the need to so many different boxes it would fill if we did start reoccupying above shops and retail units everywhere, not just in our towns, but in our cities. Cathal Crimmins, good to meet you, Margaret. Okay. Cathal. And Mimi, the coat will be reunited ASAP.
Thank you so much, Joe. And thank you to Cathal. Thank you very much. Lovely man.
Okay. Thank you, Mimi Hayes and Cathal Crimmins. David Doyle, murmurations. You say they do happen in Dublin. Where?
Oh, they happen in Dublin, Joe, all right. John F. Kennedy Road and Bluebell.
Ah. And Bluebell. Now, you see, a lot of people don't know where Bluebell is. You know that. In Dublin, even. Would you explain to people where Bluebell is?
Well, it depends on where they are. What way you want to come into it, Joe. You can come into
What way do most people come into Dublin? The Naas Road.
Well, they come in the Naas Road, And you would turn left down towards Knockmitten.
Yeah.
And then come around that way.
And
you actually see them flying out as far as Woody's there down the Naas Road and coming back in to where Access Ways is on John F. Kennedy Road.
And can you estimate, like James earlier on was saying in the photograph he took of the murmuration in the shape of a board, that famous photograph, there could have been up to 200,000 starlings in that configuration.
No, I wouldn't imagine there would be anything to that capacity, Joe, but there would be thousands of them. There's a place on John F. Kennedy Road that's Access Waste, and there's a garage opposite that, JFK Cars, I think it's called.
Okay.
And there's a massive big aerial on it.
Okay.
And there's about 30 cables come down off that.
Okay.
And you would see them actually all gathered on that.
Wow.
Before they take off.
And David, is it like clockwork? Would they be there every evening?
No. You wouldn't see them every evening, Joe. You wouldn't see them every evening.
Okay. Now, as you mentioned, I've been thinking about Bluebell the last few days, and I'll tell you why. I went to see this incredible new Irish film directed by Claire Frances Bourne over the weekend. It was showing in the Lighthouse, and it's called Ready or Not, but it was filmed in Bluebell, and which is a very unique part of Dublin, because I remember when I was a child, my Auntie Monica got a maisonette off the corporation in Bluebell, and we thought she was living in France or something. But Bluebell is very, and it's in Claire's movie, Ready or Not. The colours are there, the terracotta colours, the greens, the canal is there. It's a very unusual spot in Dublin, and the movie itself, by the way, is a superb movie. It's ultimately about consent. And this whole thing, we see all the ads on the buses and about consent and on radio and television. Well, I think our Department of Education wouldn't do as well as getting this movie, Ready or Not, And it's very enjoyable, and it's also very dark. There's a dark element to it as well, but very, very real. Get this movie ready or not, and show it to every transition year in the country, or indeed even put it on the curriculum, because it will spark really thoughtful debate, as the showing did on Saturday night in Dublin, about the whole issue of consent. By the way, there's three there's the actresses in it. Some of them are from the area: Ruby Conway Dunn, Molly Bourne, and Alicia Weaver. That's, I'm just mentioning the three young women. Were absolutely superb, and there's obviously men in as well, who are Dane White O'Hara's good, Lewis Brophy. The performances are brilliant, but that's called Ready or Not, and it was shot in Blue Bell, which I haven't heard mentioned on the program for years. But there we are. That's Ready or Not, and at this moment doesn't have a distributor in Ireland. But I'm so proud when I saw the RTE logo at the end, that RTE had supported the movie, which means eventually, hopefully, it'll get to other festivals apart from the Dublin International Film Festival, where I hope it wins an award. I'm sure it will. It'll get to other festivals, but also RTE will eventually show. And it's a full length, an hour and 24 minutes. It'll stand up to any coming of age. But I say that issue of consent is so sensitively and brilliantly portrayed in the movie. Thanks indeed, David Doyle. Let me bring in Daniel McGibney. Daniel. Oh, you're around the same area, aren't you, Daniel, near Toyota in Ballyfermot in Dublin?
Yes. Good afternoon, Joe.
Okay.
Do you think I'm going to concur with that last speaker, because I really think it's the same murmuration.
Okay.
And the reason I say this is because I work in National Lighting across the road.
Okay.
You know, you're familiar with it.
Yeah, of course. Near Toyota there,
Just opposite Toyota.
Yeah.
And this murmuration happens just over there's a building providers on the Killeen Road.
Okay.
And it happens there regularly. And I've watched it. Now, you were talking about numbers. I would say there's only 10,000 boards, but still it's a murmuration.
Yeah. And you can never say, Daniel, when you've seen one murmuration, you've seen them all, because they're all different, aren't they? They're all mesmeric.
Yeah,
they're all mesmeric.
Absolutely. And I was just looking at the one down in Loch Ennell, and it does shape as a board.
Yeah, it's incredible, that one.
That was
James Cromby. Stay there, Daniel. Go across the capital. Fintan Damer. Fintan, good afternoon. You're a twitcher. You're a board watcher. You say there used to be a massive roost site in Cabarrus and Coolock.
There was, Joe. Yeah. I'm going back maybe 30 years ago now. Sometime mid-90s, there used to be a massive murmuration. And our roost site as well, because they used to roost on the factory walls. So that was a spectacle in itself, just watching 10,000 birds roosting on ivy that used to grow on the factory wall, you know.
And then hadn't they a lot of greenery around the factory in Coolock?
There is, actually. That's actually used to where you see them. They had a little pitch and put course there just to one side of it. It's just a field now at the moment. But you'd see them flying over that before they'd go into roost on the factory wall, you know.
Yeah, and that's where they make the best chocolate in the world, you know that, from real milk.
Unfortunately, the ivy's gone now. They took it down, so
And you are a twitcher.
Well, not so much a twitcher. I'm more of a bird watcher. Twitchers are a different breed. But,
twitchers go after rare birds, don't they?
Yeah.
They go after them to photograph them, not to hunt them.
What they call ticking them, like, you know, they're ticking them off the list.
But
I don't think too much of that. I've more of an interest from a conservation
perspective,
you know.
Oh, well done. Yeah. And what do you do in real life?
I work as an ecologist.
Oh, fantastic. So that's not... That's not too far away from your interest, though.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's where the interest came from. Really, I've been bird watching since I was 10 or 11 years of age. So
just in terms of the calendar, Fintan, murmurations will they finish around St. Patrick's Day?
They will. Yeah.
Okay.
Or maybe even a little bit before. But it kind of a little bit depends on the weather. If you get a mild week, all those murmurations will break up, because those birds are not Irish birds. Actually, they're a lot of them are continental birds, you know, so they'll be heading back to Scandinavia and that.
And who will visit us for spring?
Well, we get a lot of passerine, what they call passerine species, which are birds are kind of sparrow-sized, or smaller than that. So we got warblers, all our swallows, swifts, house martins, sand martins. They all start to come back now in the next few weeks.
Okay.
By the way, we lose all our fowl and wader species. They all head back north as well.
And when did the brent geese go back?
Yeah, they'll be home. Well, they'll only kind of stay till kind of end of March, maybe even early April sometimes.
Well, you know, a lot of GAA pitchers in Dublin will be relieved.
I'm sure they will. Yeah.
Because they've gone further inland, haven't they? The brent geese.
Yeah. Well, they've changed their habits really over the last 30-40 years. You know, you wouldn't have seen them away from the coast at one time. Now they go quite a distance inland because they've changed what they feed on. Yeah, used to feed on the Dostro grass, which is a marine grass, but they generally have that's all gone by before Christmas now. So they start feeding on this our normal grass and football pitches, you know.
And do you want to tell our listeners why football pitches don't really, they don't hurt them, but they don't really welcome the brent geese?
It's the poo, I suppose, that's the issue, you know. not a lot you can do about that, but it's a small price to pay, I think, for some sure people, and you see tens of thousands.
And have you any, Fintan, in your study, have you any idea how the murmuration is actually organised?
Yeah, somebody mentioned there earlier on about the eight birds.
No, the octet,
so one bird keeps an eye on the eight birds nearest it.
Right.
And so the whole flock is broken up into groups of eight, if you like. So as long as they keep an eye on the eight birds that are around them, nobody crashes into each other, you know?
Yeah. Okay, Fintan, stay there for Bernard. Bernard, good afternoon.
How are you doing, Joe? How are things?
Murmuration, your connection, please.
Now, Joe, I was on the way to work a few years ago in Carlow from Tipperary.
Yeah.
And I stopped on the road to see this thing in the sky, and it was a murmuration, and loads of people pulled in along the road to watch it and take photographs.
Safely, yeah.
Safely. So I said, how could you capture this and make it in art form?
Wow.
So I retired there recently, and when I was growing up, my father was a blacksmith, so I always had interest in metalwork and that.
Okay.
So I decided to make it in the workshop one day. It took me weeks, but I welded 500 washers together.
Okay.
In a freehand formation of a murmuration, and it's as close to living. Every time you look at it, every time a light shines on it or you pass it, it all changes. It's 3D.
It shimmers, like you get a different...
It shimmers.
Yes.
You have the photograph there in front of you. It shimmers.
I'm dying to see the photograph, yeah.
And it's actually made up of 500 individual pieces, and it's about 4.5 foot wide by 3 foot high.
Okay.
It's a living murmuration. It's as close as you'll get.
And how many washers are in that?
There's over 530 washers, exactly.
Wow.
And they're all welded together individually. Yeah. It takes a lot of time, and it's freehand.
That's
you cannot make a model for this, because a murmuration changes every millisecond.
Okay, that's real art, and of course real art is the creation of nature as well. Thanks indeed, Bernard. Daniel McGibbon, Fintan Damer, sound, and I'm McMonagall, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, Tara Lockery, grant producer, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Cozy up with the new arrivals, in-store or online at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.